What are you waiting for?
Stay Human. I'm Michael Goldberg. I don't know what I'm waiting for. Norman Lear, the TV producer, he's one of my heroes. He's turning 96 this year, and he's got a couple of new television projects in the works, new series. He also recently published his autobiography and co-produced a documentary film about his life, 96. When he's asked, how does he do it? Here's what he says.
Well, I think the two least considered small words in the English language may be over and next. When something is over, over, we're on to next. And I live in that moment. I mean, this is it. This is the best conversation I could possibly be having. And it took me 93 years to get here.
On today's show, a few different takes on what's next. And especially if whatever you were planning turns out not to be exactly how it comes out, what's plan B? Stay tuned. It's a group called Fanny Walked the Earth, a new incarnation of the legendary Northern California 1960s all-female band, Fanny. Their hair is gray now, but they sure got attitude. I don't expect to be like Norman Lear at 96 any more than I was like him at 36 or 66, but I do appreciate his advice, two words, over and next. Both of them are a challenge, but being able to let go when something's over and being able to grab onto something that's next, that only seems to get more important as the years go by. On today's show, we'll look at Plan B from a couple of very different directions. Aaron Wanger takes the long view. He walks us through the search for extraterrestrial intelligence and what's next for humanity. Terry O'Brien searches for the right metaphor to help her see the path her life has taken. And Robert Jevney tells us how he's planning, sort of, for his retirement. I had a telephone visit the other day with Jack McGee. He's my cousin's husband. He's a Hollywood actor. And I asked him if he'd been thinking about retirement.
You know, as an actor, especially as a character actor, the older and uglier you get, sometimes the more work you're going to get. So I don't know how that's going to unfold, but I don't worry.
I think he's probably got nothing to worry about. He's been a successful character actor for a long time, more than 200 movie and television credits to his name. He became, in his words, a minor TV star in the series Rescue Me until the writers killed off his character. But this year, at age 69, his career took an unexpected turn. He's currently appearing on Broadway in a new production of Eugene O'Neill's The Iceman Cometh, starring Denzel Washington. Jack McGee, he plays a supporting character, one of the regulars at the saloon where the play takes place. I asked him if the move from TV and movies to the Broadway stage was a difficult one, if he'd ever imagined he'd be doing this.
A pipe dream, say, well, it would be nice to do that. However, I don't want to work at it. You know, God forbid I should work at it. And then oddly enough, you were talking about this subject being life changes. Stephanie and I, my lovely wife, have been romancing the idea of maybe making the next chapter of our lives. We would make a geographical move, and so we were back looking at houses in Woodstock, New York. And that's when I got the call 2 days before we were leaving to go back and look at some houses for 3 or 4 days. They said they want to see you for Iceman Cometh. And I says, really? And long story short, they said, well, they're going to see people next Thursday in New York, but you can put yourself on tape. I said, well, I'm going to be in New York next Thursday. So it kind of just happened the way I guess it was supposed to happen. And we've been contemplating, and still are. We're going up again next week, next Monday, to see some houses again. My one day off to see a couple of houses while she's in town, to anticipate the next chapter of our lives.
Wow.
Stage work is hard, Michael. it's a deeper commitment. You know, when you do TV and film, you go in and you may not in a 5 day work week, maybe your contribution to the project only involves maybe a day or two. Whereas in theater, especially with something the size of this project, The Iceman Cometh, there are 17, 18 characters in it. And we rehearsed for 2 months straight, 6 days a week for 12 hours a day for me. Yeah, you know, I was excited at every turn. I was every day was a new adventure for me. And to get to step on it, I equated to like maybe being in triple or double A ball, and then all of a sudden you're up at the plate in the major leagues with actors that have been trained and have been working for years. You know, and here comes this little television, this solid C-minus. TV star, and now you're playing with the big boys on Broadway. It was initially intimidating, but once I got through the first week or so, I said, "Wait a minute, hold on a second. I belong here. I can do this. I'm as qualified as any of the other characters that are here." So it became more comfortable for me, and then less of an intimidating thing, more of a challenge thing, which made it so much more pleasant. Initially, I found myself kind of just listening, and then I started to think, which I think was healthy for me. As my character, what do I think about what that guy's saying? Do I believe him? Don't I believe him? Is he full of bull? Is he this, that? And it made it easier for me, and made the time go by quicker. Which I guess is what it's all about, staying with when they talk about staying in the moment. It's projection and what's going to happen tomorrow will take you right out of today in the blink of an eye. You know, I've learned that over the years myself, mainly in recovery. I've been in recovery for about now it's 23 years, and that's one of the things that I was taught and I hold on to, you know, is that it's, whatever's going on with you right now, it's, whatever you're feeling right now is a feeling. It's not a fact. You know, feelings are not facts. And if we keep reminding ourselves that those feelings are going to change again, and which leads to staying in the moment. And it can be healthy if you practice it.
Good advice from actor Jack McGee. Practice, but mainly practice being in the moment. That must be what the B stands for in Plan B. That's Bette Smith, a new release, Do Your Thing. My friend Robert Jevney does his thing, including producing the weekly series here on Northern Community Radio, Wordish, featuring area writers and poets. That program, like this one, receives support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund, thanks much to the taxpayers of Minnesota. Here's Robert Jevney planning for what comes next.
I've reached an age, or close enough, when an old man's fancy turns to retirement. I have 6 more years of work, well, 6 2/3, or 6.66 if you get my drift. And I can't help but think about the other side, and right now I far more wonder if what I've always thought would be there in my retirement will be there when I get there than I think about death, and I always think about that. I am white, I am male, I am privileged far more than some and far less than others. I am the tail end of the boomer generation and the leading edge of whatever failed group was next. I am destined to be ignored and unsung in any other than the most bureaucratic sense. I am taxed. I will die. There will be records. So be it. As such, I am obliged, out of stubbornness or vanity, but most likely fear, to impose upon the rest of my life a bucket list. Here we go. A vasectomy. I'm going to get a vasectomy. I mean, enough is enough, right? Vaping. I have never vaped. I would like to. It seems like it would be as cool as smoking Swisher Sweets behind the Masonic Temple when I was 13, except modern and stylish. I was disconcerted recently over the loss of the only vape shop within an hour's drive. Get the band back together. Maybe the long drive to the vape store will give me the time to work on my singing chops. Then all I have to do is scour the internet to find my old buddies and convince them of our enduring promise. Figure out the internet. If I want to find my old buddies, I guess I'll have to spend some time doing this. Nobody seems to be in the phone book anymore. I checked. It took me a while to find a phone booth, much less a phone booth with a phone book in it. I've always wanted to be one of those people who can pull funny lines for movies or TV at will. Normally I'll be the guy in the corner at a party struggling with the witty part of repartee, and someone will start up with some hilarious line from a classic film or TV show, and pretty soon everyone is screaming lines over one another and laughing to beat the band. It's great, and I get so jealous and worked up that it tongue-ties me even more, and I just end up screaming, "Dynamite!" And everything gets real quiet. I've got to get over that. I've dawdled some over the idea of getting some power somehow, but once you've dawdled over power, you're done, so that's a non-starter. Facial tattoos. I want to get something that really says something about me, hence I've decided to get a tattoo that mimics the wrinkles on my face. I think that would pretty much say it all. Crowdsourcing. I don't really know what that is, but it sounds like a party, and ultimately I think that's what retirement should be. Well, that's my list so far. Yeah, I should probably stretch and get some exercise and watch what I eat and drink more water and get some rest, blah, 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 but that ain't gonna happen.
I could walk all night, and we could and we did. Down a gravel road to the tiny town, and the door always open. Now we say I could walk all night, it's not true. We can't walk all night, no, because we don't want to. We want a bed and a blanket, some light breakfast sometime tomorrow. We want a bed and a blanket, some light breakfast sometime tomorrow. And I sing it now, hey, 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 who would have thunk it? Hey, 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 who would have thunk it? We used to say I could eat a horse, and we could and we did. Fast food joints in the middle of someplace, on the way to someplace else. Now we say I could eat a horse, it's not true. We can't eat a horse. No, because we don't want to. We want some from the cookbook, that new one with the great graphics. Some from the cookbook, that new one with the great graphics. So when I sing it now, hey, 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 who would have thunk it? Hey, 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 who would have thunk it? We used to say, I don't care if I never have any money, long as I have my sweet honey and a shack in the woodland. I would say I don't care if I don't have money, but it's not true. We can't live without money, no, because we don't want to. We want one of those and two of those, and oh, that one looks neat, wrap it up, put it on my MasterCard, put it on my Visa, and I sing it now. Hey, 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 who would have thunk it? Hey, 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 who would have thunk it? I don't care if I never grow old, I'm gonna flame, gonna burn, take one quick turn and be gone like James Dean. Now it don't say that it's too late to die young, so we sit at the table long after supper and the good wine. Here's what we sing, we go, hey, 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 who would have thunk it?
I myself am still trying to figure out how I came to be the one of the 1 in 7 Americans who are receiving Social Security. I remember about 15 years ago when my friend Harry Dodge announced he was retiring, which seemed funny to me because he'd never had a job in the 25 years I'd known him. But he had collected a paycheck when he was younger, and it was no joke to him, a check in the mail every month. Now I kind of see the point. There's always been a lot of us boomers, and we're not all retirement age yet. There's about 46 million people getting retirement benefits now, but by the time Robert Jevney is ready to retire, it'll be about 77 million. And of course, the ratio of wage earners to retirees keeps going down or up, whatever it does. You know what I mean. We could actually fix the Social Security system so that old people don't live in poverty, and rich people pay a percentage of their total salary while they're working, and young people are assured of being able to collect when they retire, but that would take a working democracy to do that. I don't know if we can bring this one out of retirement. There is another solution, and it was put forward in a brilliantly funny book by Christopher Buckley called Boomsday. In it, a 20-something blogger named Cassandra sounds the alarm to her generation that they are being ripped off and the old people are bankrupting the government. It goes viral, of course. There are riots on the golf courses of retirement homes. And an ambitious politician devises a plan to stop the rioting from the young people and to save Social Security. He calls it voluntary transitioning. The deal would be people on Social Security can get more money now if they commit themselves to ending their lives by a specified age, a date certain, and the proposal catches on. Its proponents suggest that there be an advertising campaign featuring celebrities, you know, like the drink milk ads, only they're drinking poison. And the National Lobbying Group for Senior Citizens, called the American Baby Boomers Association, or ABBA, gets behind the idea because they have the power to keep sweetening the deal. ABBA's slogan is "Special from Cradle to Grave." That's how it is in Christopher Buckley's novel Boomsday. In the real world, though, I guess younger generations have plenty of reason for resentment. There was a survey done not that long ago of people whose jobs require collaboration with coworkers at bigger companies, over 500 people. The older people, the boomers, who were asked what creates the biggest roadblocks at work for them, the majority said it's the millennials. And when they asked the millennials the same question, guess what? It's the boomers. Seeing as my generation is special from the cradle to the grave, our plan is just to keep doing and getting whatever we want to the last breath. And I would just like to say to you younger people out there, don't worry, we'll get out of the way eventually. If you're just starting out, one thing you can count on is it won't be what you expect. Just stick to plan B and it'll all work out fine.
It was a teenage wedding and the old folks wished them
It's Elise LeGros with a new take on the old rocker. You're tuned to your Northern Community Radio Service, KAXE KBXE, streaming at kaxe.org. Our program is Stay Human, and every week at this hour, we hear from people who know something about how to do that. This week, I'm wondering what Plan B might be. Coming up, we'll hear from our staff physicist, Aaron Wenger, on the exploration of space and where humans might be going. But first, we'll be a little bit more down to earth with storyteller and writer Terry O'Brien. I asked her recently what her plan was and how she came to be where she is.
I seek a metaphor for my life. Something to explain where I come from, the choices I've made, where I'm going, things like that. I live in the last place on a dead-end road, which for a long time when I was a single mother living a rustic lifestyle with two kids, seemed like the perfect metaphor for my life. I can do a lot with the image of a road. The U-turn is my go-to escape plan. If you see the sign that says bridge out, go back. Don't be thinking about getting a running start and taking a big leap forward. Go back. Same thing with skating on thin ice. You go through the ice, what do? Turn around. Go back the way you came. Then there's the river, and I get that image too. Sit by a river, you see all the things come floating down, rafts of waterfowl, whole trees pinwheeling in the current, flotsam, jetsam, great gobs of dislodged bog. On a river, the view is always changing. But a river, like a road, is linear. A river only goes in one direction, downhill, always downhill. People talk about the trajectory of their lives as if each of us is a bullet or an arrow heading inexorably toward a target, but just one target. I hear trajectory. I see a cartoon duckling in a safety helmet. Its mother has packed its parachute just in case. And then someone, maybe daddy, gives it the boot. And whoa, there it goes, soaring high on the arc of its story towards some distant goal. Thing is, I never seem to have even one concrete goal in my life. My parents chose the college I went to get me away from the boyfriend, who I married anyway. He moved us north because that's what he wanted to do. I stayed when he and the other so-called hippies left because I didn't know where else to go. This apple maybe hasn't fallen far from the tree, but it has rolled a good long ways. I'm not a self-starter, and didn't know what the expression meant when I first heard it. All my early cars required extraordinary measures to get them started. My first car, a two-door, both on the same side, cost me $50. I learned to identify a carburetor. If it didn't start, it taught me to wedge something in the choke, a screwdriver maybe, to hold it open and give it extra gas. In the winter, if the engine wouldn't turn over, I shoveled hot coals straight from the wood stove into a dishpan, and with a pair of hot pans, hustled that dishpan outside underneath the oil pan. There was always a can of starting fluid rattling around in the trunks of my cars. If you can't define self-starter, you know you're not one. Then there's the Wheel of Fortune. Where she stops, nobody knows. The first one I ever saw was at a Catholic school fair in the church basement of St. Monica's. I thought it was kind of like what kids did with playing cards and clothespins on their bicycle wheels, except without the prizes. We kids didn't get to spin the big wheel. Only the parents could hit that jackpot. It was all sort of hush-hush with our mother, a scandal of sorts, Catholics gambling in the basement of the church. That's what we say about life. It's all a big gamble. But again, the wheel, around and around she goes, in just one direction, unless she springs off her spindle, rolls out the door, and down the street like the pancake that jumped out of the frying pan. I've done that. thought I was miserable, that I couldn't take it anymore, then jumped right out of the frying pan and into the fire. I could have hung on a little longer, maybe climbed up on a little mound of sliced potatoes, put a little green pepper underneath my feet, a little distance between myself and that hot grease, the heat of the moment. Lucky for me, I've got legs, unlike the pancake. I crawled into the pile of peels, hid out until someone tossed me out at the edge of the garden. A frosty night soothed the burn. I picked myself up again, headed down the road, my hair trailing onion skins and a smell like compost. Lately, I've been thinking about a game we had when we were kids. It was a mini pinball game. Not like a real one in an arcade with bells and whistles and a picture of a pirate ship and a buccaneer with a wooden leg leering at a pirate queen, a silver dagger clamped between her teeth. The player flips the levers and sends the ball flying from bumper to pin. Ching, ching, you got your first real job. Ching, 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 you got married. Ching, 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 you had a baby. Ching, ching, you lost your job. And ching, you got divorced? Now the pirate ship is starting to sink, but ching, 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 you got married again to someone really nice this time. Oh, ching, ching, stepkids, oh no, ching, the stepkids hate you, and the ball is ricocheting all over the place, and you get divorced again, and no, ching, you're not going to marry her again. The ship is slipping lower, aft end first, and then, in one miraculous moment, when the ball, the incline, and your body English are perfectly in sync, ding, 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 you get 50,000 points. Bluebeard winks his one good eye. The pirate queen's bosom swells. The ship breaches water streaming from her decks. Sheets taut with wind. Free play, free play. You get to start all over. Ching, 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 ching. But like I said, our little pinball game wasn't like that. It was handheld, about 12 inches long, 8 inches wide, with a small ball bearing and a clear plastic cover that kept the ball from flying off and taking out someone's eye. Like my brother's, he was always grabbing at it in the back seat of the Rambler station wagon, mother warning if we didn't stop the bickering, she'd take it away. It had a spring-loaded knob on both sides of the base. You pull the knob, it propelled the ball. The ball shoots off the side, maybe pauses, momentarily trapped in a finger of curved plastic. That's how you score the points. And then caroms off again. I never cared about scoring points. It was always about that ball taking off into unexpected directions. Zig, zag, zing, zing, banging into something and then flying off again. That's me. That's been my life. I'm that ball, reacting always, seldom initiating. Proactive? That's another thing I'm not. Zinging here, zinging there, erratic, unpredictable, yet contained. And now, at this time in my life, the ball has come to rest at the end of my dead-end road. Where there's solitude and silence, everything that I love. But sometimes in my newly retired state, it's too quiet, way too static. I'd like to have another go at that game. If the yellowed plastic cover hasn't cracked and the knobs still have their spring, I'd line up the ball, pull back on the spring, and let her rip. Bingo, bango, I'd be back in action again.
Thanks to Terry O'Brien for that. She's kind of a pinball wizard, I guess. Me, I just pretty much bop along to the cartoon music in my head, never guessing what might be falling out of the sky towards me. Here's Steamboat Willie featuring Mickey Mouse with the amazing Keystone Big Band.
Got me, they could be little green men. That wouldn't stop me buzzing through the galaxy. Who can beat a ride for free? For all I know, I'm just a perfect fella. Not too white, not too yellow. Get me on that big spaceship. This could be my hippest trip. Hey, you UFO guy, put me first on standby. I'm traveling light, my attitude's right. I've seen them at night. Don't you call me crazy, they were in the sky. Looking quite amazing, doing figure eights around the moon.
Round the moon.
Why'd they have to leave so soon? Count me in, I ain't no hesitator. I'll jump right aboard and write home later saying, how are all you folks at home? I just got the bug to roam. Hey, you UFO guy, how you make that thing fly? Say, I won't tell, I won't say a thing. Hello, Saturn, Aurora Borealis, we'll hit them all. We'll land in Dallas.
Throw a big parade for me.
I'll make the news, just wait and see. I tell them about my galactic flight. We was buzzing left and whizzing right. So put your brakes on where you be and plunk that saucer down by me. Hey, you skinny spaceman, can't you see that I'm on the lam? Come on, you flying saucer, make me an offer. I booked the flight, the time is right. I got my bags and I got my shots. So come on, shorty, read my thoughts.
Yeah, I'd go too. Part of any plan B always has to include an escape route, don't you think? I have a friend who, whenever he goes anywhere, stakes out the perimeter. He always keeps an eye in all directions. and another friend who, in a public place, will always take a seat closest to the exit. Plan B. It's one thing to think about where your own life might be going, and something else to think about life going on without you. I have been preparing for the futuristic present ever since I was about 10 years old and started reading science fiction, which is where a lot of today's scientists and visionaries got their ideas about the future. Elon Musk, for one, who's intent on colonizing Mars, SpaceX dedicated to the future. Physicist Michio Kaku's newest book is called The Future of Humanity: Transforming Mars, Interstellar Travel, Immortality, and Our Destiny Beyond Earth. See, just the title is way more fun than worrying about what I'm going to do next. Here he is explaining Plan B.
Well, you know, our life on the Earth is potentially endangered by asteroid collisions, supervolcano eruptions, not to mention self-inflicted problems like global warming and nuclear warfare. And we need an insurance policy, a backup plan. Now, remember, the dinosaurs did not have a space program. That's why they're not here today. We do have a space program. And that's why we need a backup plan. Now, no one's saying that we should leave the Earth and go to Mars, but a settlement. A settlement on Mars is a definite possibility, and NASA has teamed up with Silicon Valley billionaires to make this a reality. For 50 years, NASA was criticized as being the agency to nowhere. However, now there's a new energy, a new excitement. The president has said we're going to go back to the moon by next year, and then on to Mars. And then millions of people tuned in to Elon Musk launching of the Falcon Heavy rocket. Now, that was no ordinary rocket. That was a moon rocket, fully capable of putting astronauts around the moon, funded by private funds. Jeff Bezos, the richest man on Earth, the man behind Amazon, has created his own private spaceport in Texas. He has his own fleet of rockets. Elon Musk wants to create a multi-planet species in case something happens to us on the planet Earth. And he has set his sights onto Mars. So we're talking about a new excitement, a new energy that we didn't have for 50 years.
I definitely can dig it. And I was looking for some confirmation from somebody smarter than me, so I asked our staff physicist, Aaron Wenger, what he thinks.
It offers what appears to be a chance. I mean, you can take some of the comments that are being made these days, at least on the internet, about our terrific quantum leap ahead in the exploration of extrasolar planets. You got to understand, Michael, that 30 years ago, when I started talking about, maybe a bit more than that, when I started talking about this kind of stuff in astronomy classes and so on, there was no evidence, no direct evidence, zero, of planets around any other star but around this one. There were hints in the built-in wiggle in what's called a star's proper motion. There were hints that there might be, but no real data. In those 35 or some years, that's gone from hints to absolutely conclusive, you can't escape it, that planets around other stars are as common as grains of sand. It's really true. I mean, the data on this is crystal clear, both from previous stuff, but the Kepler mission and now soon to be the new TESS mission that'll do a bigger job of finding planets than Kepler ever did. That's new space mission TESS is settling into a weird orbit around the Earth, but that takes it most of the way to the moon. It's a really elongated orbit. It will discover more planets in the first year of its operation than have been discovered altogether up to this point. Some of those planets, some percentage of them, are reasonably Earth-like in that they'll have water as a liquid on their surface. They won't be too large or too small. The temperature zone that they're in around the star will be about right and so on. And so the question obviously arises, could this be our escape route? If we really screw up this planet sufficiently, can we escape there? And the answer, of course, is no, not within what anybody, I think, can foresee as probable human technology in the next 100 years. these things, compared to anything that we've ever done, are so far away, so distant from this planet, that there is nothing in my wildest, even science fiction imagination, that I can see getting us there. The interesting question to me becomes, and you see this in internet conversations too, could it be that lurking out there somewhere are creatures, sentient creatures, who can find us and deliver to us a sermon or whatever it would take of how to save ourselves, you know? It's the savior complex. Well, I don't see that happening either. Their difficulty in reaching us with a sermon, much less a physical presence, is the same difficulty of us reaching them with a signal. If you have a planet around a star that's 25 light years from us, and that's close, man, that's right next door. If you have such a star with a planet on it, and by whatever thing that the universe runs, that life gets started on that planet and bootstraps itself along to becoming some sense of self-awareness, and therefore some sense of technology and doing stuff and so on. It doesn't just live, it creates around itself. If that happens, and they happen to detect, say, a microwave signal from this planet, it could be I Love Lucy from the 1950s. And they say, oh my golly, there's some other creatures there who can do this kind of stuff. We ought to get in touch with them. So they send out a signal. And in that sermon that they send us is the story of life, the universe, and everything. It tells us how to run our business better. And Lord knows we need it. So it takes 25 years to get here. And in the meantime, there's no signal from them. We don't know they're there. If they had sent that signal in 1804 when Lewis and Clark started out, nothing on Earth would have ever been able to pick it up. It would have just washed over the planet like waves on a beach. We would have never detected anything from it. So it takes timing. They have to detect us. They have to signal us in a time period wherein we can receive the signal. It's an impossibility. The odds are fantastically against it. I say this occasionally, people ask me this kind of thing. I said, geez, if you're going to put your faith in something, don't put it in that. Because the odds of that are so bad. It's like buying the lottery ticket, man. It's not going to happen. If you want to put your faith in something, maybe put it in education. Maybe put it in bringing a greater segment of the population to some understanding of how fragile this world is and what an absolute blessing it is to be alive on it. That's maybe where you put your faith.
Can't see why Aaron Wenger and Michio Kaku couldn't both be right. I don't know what Plan B is, but I'm pretty sure it's got to include Michael Franti. And Aaron Wenger and Robert Jevney and Terry O'Brien, Jack McGee, thanks for being on the show today. The program's called Stay Human, because what else are you going to do?
had my uniform shirt off. I think I pulled a hamstring when the band played his last song. My movements were erratic, I had had a couple few. Whirring like the Leslie speaker, the organist played through. And that's when I saw you. I was made anew. I didn't have time to change, I said, 'cause Thursday's hours late. Straightened out the collar and we began to acclimate. Took out a picture of Savannah, she was coming up on two. Living with her mother since I had my Waterloo. But you know what else is true? I was made anew. Snaps of your blue jeans banging in the drive. Most of this stuff I realize is hardly news to you. I don't wanna mess things up the way